Blog Talk Radio.
Or good evening, at least over here. This is Furl with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Happy V-Day, everyone. I'm here in New York City, where it's bright and sunny. Yes, my halogen lamp in here is lit up nice and bright in my room. Having just come back from Pennsylvania today, yes. Oh, lots of driving. I have a few folks that I met who will talk to us. I stayed in Hershey, and I didn't have any of their chocolate, though. Phil Guarno, owner of Fenici's restaurant in Hershey, will tell us about a bit of the history regarding his restaurant. And it's relation to another restaurant called Alfred's Victorian. And also about, we're going to talk about Hershey Theater. Then there's the battlefields of Gettysburg. And I took a tour. But, and then there's the tale of the civilians. Pat and Schwetz, I'm not sure. She'll let me know whether I pronounce it correctly. Well, take us on her walking tour and his coffee talk, as we say here in New York. What's the beans all about? How do you do a proper tasting? And why are K-cups not a bra size? Well, Green Mountain Coffee and Gloria Jean's Coffee will fill us in. Then it's the 25th anniversary of Michael Jackson's Thriller. Yes, and editor of Pace Magazine, Nick Marino, will tell us, will thrill us, rather, with his story. And now, I know I have a call. We got one of our interviewees who's on the phone here.
Hey, it's Patty Schutz from Gettysburg.
Yes. So tell us, tell us what you do first. So
I own American Stories Historic Walking Tours, and we're a little strange in Gettysburg in that we don't do ghost tours. We talk about the civilians who actually lived in the town and got caught in the middle of this battle that, man, they weren't too happy about in general.
Yeah, so tell us some of the little tales about that.
Well, a lot of times people have this picture of the Civil War, you know, Americans, the brave men are going off to fight and the women are kind of weeping into their hankies. And it's not really like that all the time in Gettysburg. For example, the first time the Confederates came into town was about 5 days before the battle, June 26, 1863. And when it became obvious that the Confederates were coming into town, the men of the town collectively took their horses and they left town, going away from the Confederates, because they didn't want the Confederates to get their horses. Now, they did leave their women and children behind, because you have to have priorities during a battle and during a war. And, you know, you could get more another wife or more kids, but a horse is pretty hard to train. So they did that, and that was pretty common throughout southern Pennsylvania in front of the Confederates coming into town. Really, this was an enemy army, and we can think about, you know, all the fears you might have if Al-Qaeda was coming through New York. You'd be a little concerned. And the people of Gettysburg were just as concerned. They didn't know what the Confederates would do when they came into town. But the Confederates really were pretty well behaved in town. They had some orders from General Robert E. Lee that they were supposed to behave themselves, and they were nice enough to set up the regimental band there on Center Square, Gettysburg, with and play music for us, including the song Dixie. We weren't terribly impressed with that concert, but it wasn't a nasty thing. Just up the street from Center Square, there was a little boy by the name of Charlie McCurdy. He was 10 years old. And you have to think like a little boy. When you think about it, you see these wild-looking, dirty men, and they're coming into town, and they're dirty, and they're yelling, and they've got guns, and some of them are shooting their guns up into the air. And Charlie actually came out on the sidewalk to watch this, and he described it later. He said it was as good as any Wild West show. But this little boy is standing out on the street and with many of his neighbors, and he's watching the Confederates come through the town. And across the street from his house, there was a shop that he really liked. It was Philip Winter's Candy Store. Now, Philip Winter had seen those Confederates coming. He had gone and locked himself into his apartment, and he was really hoping that those Confederates would just march on through town and never notice his shop. What do you think the chances are of hungry men marching past the candy store and not noticing it?
Yeah, right.
It was a pipe dream. And pretty soon the Confederates were inviting Mr. Winter to come out and do business, and he opened up the shop. And within minutes of opening, he was doing the best business of his entire life quite miserably, because although the Confederates were paying for their purchases, they were paying in Confederate paper money, which, of course, wasn't worth anything up here in Pennsylvania. Well, Charlie was watching the Confederates coming out of the candy store. And they don't buy candy the way little boys buy candy. They're buying sacks filled with candy. They got their pockets bulging with candy. And if that 10-year-old child had any fear of those rebels at all, he lost it seeing all that sugar come out of the sweet shop.
Yeah.
And he went right across the street, and he put his nose up on the window, and he's watching. Well, a Confederate trooper from Virginia happened to notice that little boy with his nose up on the window. And he calls to Charlie and says, "Son, come on over here." Charlie says, "Yes, sir." "Son, do you much like candy?" "Well, yes, sir, I do." "Well, then I guess you better stick out your hands." And Charlie did that. And the Confederate reached into his hat, which was just brimming with all sorts of goodies that a little boy would want, and took out a man-sized handful and plopped it in the little boy's hands. And then that rebel disappeared into the crowd and left behind an absolutely delighted little boy who was always going to think kindly of that man who was officially his enemy for the rest of his life.
That had never happened now, I don't think.
I don't think it would happen now. We have to remember, this is before the time of total war.
Right.
And when the Confederates came into the towns of Pennsylvania, one of the things they said, their general said in just about every town, was, "We don't war on women and children like your army does." and for the most part, they didn't. They were pretty well behaved in Gettysburg.
Did any civilians get killed?
It was pretty amazing. The Confederates were in the town of Gettysburg, and the Union was firing into the town. There was sharpshooter fire going up and down the streets, and a lot of people had opted to stay in town, and only one civilian out of the 2,400 people who lived there was killed. And it was kind of a freakish thing. Her name was Jenny Wade. She had just turned 20 years old, and she was in a brick house at the bottom of Cemetery Hill, which was where the Union or Northern soldiers were. And the bullet that killed her was probably, well, it was from a Confederate sharpshooter, and it went through two doors, went through her heart, and killed her instantly. So it was, what kind of shot could that have been? But she's the only civilian killed. Initially, she's kind of famous in her death. Initially, she was buried in the backyard of the house where she died, and then she was moved to the church cemetery, and eventually she was moved to the Evergreen Cemetery, where she has a flag flying over her grave 365 days a year as a patriotic act, as deemed by Congress. So she became a hero as the result of being the only civilian killed in a very dangerous situation.
So it wasn't even like on purpose, huh?
Well, not, and she wasn't doing, you know, you think bravery. She's, you know, crawling across the battlefield, taking water to the, you know, wounded soldiers. No, she's in the house baking. So I don't think she was really very brave.
No. How about, give us another little tale.
Well, if you're going to look for a woman who I do think was very, very brave during the Battle of Gettysburg, she lived on Baltimore Street, just up the street about two blocks from where Jenny Wade was killed, and her name was Catherine Garlock. Now, Mrs. Garlock was home with her three kids when the fighting started. Now, Baltimore Street became a shooting gallery. Southern soldiers are in the town. They're shooting down on the Cemetery Hill. The Northern soldiers are shooting up Baltimore Street. So it's very dangerous. And the safest place for you to be, if you happen to live there, would be down in your basement. The only problem was Catherine Garlock's basement had about a foot of water in it from a recent rainstorm. Mrs. Garlock was not going to let a little rainwater keep her family from being safe. She and her son took logs and planks from her husband's carpenter shop, and they laid them out to build a false floor in the basement so they'd have a dry place to rest. Several neighbors showed up. They were afraid. They were looking for a safe place to stay, and Catherine invited them in, but she had assigned seats for everybody in the basement. Don't be thinking you're going to be sitting any place you want if you go to Catherine Garlock's house for protection. Twice during the battle, as they're all on that false floor in the basement, they hear the front door of the house slam open and shut. They hear heavy boot tread running up the steps toward the second floor. And in that neighborhood, on those few days, it could only mean one thing: Confederate sharpshooters. Catherine Garlock got off of her seat in the basement, and she ran up the stairs as fast as she could, and there she found a Confederate sharpshooter preparing to shoot out of her attic window. And she says to him, "You cannot do that here. You have to leave." Now, of course, this man's a sharpshooter, and he's armed. And the only thing Catherine's armed with is her index finger. But it was a very civil war, and the young man paused long enough to say, "Ma'am," she said, "look, this house is filled with innocent women and children. If you go shooting out of my attic window, you're going to draw Union artillery fire onto my house, and you'll get all these innocent people killed. You can't do that. You have to leave." So forceful was Catherine Garlock that not once but twice she threw these armed men out of her house. One poor fellow got down to the front door, and it's raining bullets up and down Baltimore Street. He fired a blast out into the street, and in the smoke from his blast, he ran across the street and dove into the alley. I guess he thought it was better to take on the whole Union Army than an aggravated Mrs. Garlock. But they never did use her house as a sharpshooter's nest. She just would not allow it.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I can't see that happening.
I think today they'd just shoot her and...
Yeah, that's just right.
Just go over her body. But
lady, you're dead.
Sometimes they were under orders to be nice to the ladies.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. I want to let everybody know, it was really, really cold while we did this, going around. It was a tour of downtown, and all the in historical events that happened. This is a must, definitely a must for people going to Gettysburg. I guess it's sort of more fun, I would say, than actually going to the battlefield.
Why, thank you. We try to make history fun. I have a lot of fun talking to people. And people are, the thing about the civilians of Gettysburg, they dressed in different clothes, they had different hairstyles, but as we talk about those folks, you'll recognize your neighbors, you'll recognize your Uncle Joe, you'll recognize your daughter. They're very much like us. They have the same foibles and the same bravery and the same cowardices that we have today. So we can have a lot of fun.
There's also something, what is the thing in regards to Abraham Lincoln? What's the thing downtown there?
Right in downtown, the fellow who is responsible for inviting Abraham Lincoln lived right on Center Square. He was a lawyer and judge by the name of David Will, and he had this idea about having a national soldier cemetery to bury all the Union dead in one place, because after the battle, they're burying them everywhere. And once he gets permission from the governor of Pennsylvania to buy this land, surely the other states will kick in and help. He invites dignitaries to a dedication for the cemetery. And one of the people that he invites, who he expects absolutely positively will not come, is Abraham Lincoln. The man is the President of the United States. This is a state function, not a national function. And he's running a country that's in the middle of a war. He may be busy. And nobody could have been more shocked than David Wills when Lincoln said, sure, I'll be there. I'll even say a few appropriate words. Then Wills sent him a second letter saying, well, you know, it's going to be really, really crowded in Gettysburg, and the hotels will be really booked. Maybe you should stay with my family when you visit the town. Now, I can't even imagine that that would happen today, that the president couldn't get a room if he came to Gettysburg or New York or any place else. But apparently he couldn't in 1863, and the hotels were so crowded that David Wills not only has the President of the United States in his home, he also has the governor of Massachusetts in his home and the governor of Pennsylvania, and they're all hanging out there for the evening before the dedication of the National Cemetery. Now, when the day of the dedication came, there's going to be this wonderful parade leading from Center Square, Gettysburg, down south, Baltimore Street, to the new National Cemetery. And somebody decided that Abraham Lincoln should look good during this parade and that he should ride a horse. But apparently nobody talked to Abraham Lincoln about this because he was not a horseman. And the problem came up, we want to put the president on a horse. We don't want him to look good, but we don't want the horse to throw him off or run to the next town with him, and that would look kind of foolish. So they had to find a very gentle horse for the president. It just so happened across the street from David Will's house was a fellow by the name of McClellan, owned a hotel, and he had a very gentle horse. This horse would follow any command. It was his children's horse, and it was a very short horse. And you might remember Abraham Lincoln was a very, very tall yeah. man. So you have a tall man sitting on a short horse, and many people in the crowd comment, you know, the president's feet almost dragged on the ground as he rode in the parade, but he was perfectly at ease in the saddle. Probably because even if he didn't know what he was doing, the horse knew exactly what he was doing.
That's great. They're redoing that house? Is that what's...
At this point in time, the National Park Service is redoing the house. I understand that the plans are that that will be a museum and possibly a stop in the downtown, that they were talking about having some shuttle service from the new Park Visitor Center eventually into downtown so that it make it easier for people to see both the visitor center and the downtown area.
Have you seen what they started to build yet?
Well, that new visitor center is supposed to be open in April, so it should be pretty close to completed. I haven't been out there yet, but I probably have a chance next month to go see what's going on.
Yeah, I did get to see a little bit of it. I mean, I can't imagine it'll be done by April, but you know, but it's looking good. It's big. I took a tour, and I'm glad somebody knows how to get around here because, like, I would be lost. It's pretty big, and it's going to have a great deal of information. I would say if people go to this visitor center and they go on a tour of the field and take your tour, they would get more than they can about the whole thing with Gettysburg.
I think that would be a real good way because you get different perspectives. I understand the new museum is supposed to have a lot of hands-on and interactive exhibits, whereas the old museum was actually somebody's house at one time, and they've just added on. So not the best, you know, if you're taking somebody's house and converting it, you know, maybe not the best space for a museum.
Yeah.
So this will give so much more room for the artifacts and to tell the story and for more interactive displays. So that, it's really a must-see.
Yeah. So do you have, like, when people go there, what do you have, a website or something, or how do they get in touch with you?
Well, we are part of the Gettysburg Convention and Visitors Bureau, and if folks go to gettysburg.travel, they'll get the center and go to the place where it says visitors, and we are listed under tours, and we're called American Stories, and right now we're in between websites. We had one, we lost it, we need to build a new one. These things happen, they tell me. So
that's great.
But more than happy, we do everything by appointment. We set up our tours by appointment, just like when you visited the CVB set, called and said, hey, can you go out on Sunday? He said, of course, love to. Even if the wind is blowing 400 miles an hour and it's 10 below zero, I would love to take a tour. So.
You know, and I have to tell you, really, I mean, it's like, well, I'm a Gemini.
Okay.
So, you know, so I have the half the brain is going, God damn, it's so freaking cold out here. When is she going to shut up already? And the other half is going, I love this. I hope she continues. Like, it's really, my own little Civil War battle was going on in my brain about this. And it's like, you know, it's like because, and I just, I mean, my feedback is because of the way you tell the stories. And, you know, what do you do aside from that? Are you an actress, by the way?
Well, no. I never had any training as an actress.
Really?
Had any training as a teacher. I've been accused of both.
Because it was really a lot of fun when you get into the character and you start, you know, it's far from boring. I mean, you really like, you know, getting into when you're talking about somebody. The way the voice sounded, you know, and the facial expressions, and it's almost like a living theater with you.
Well, thank you. I just, you know, when I go out on tours like that, I never get cold because I'm usually moving around and jumping around so much that by the time I'm into the first story, I've warmed up. I do feel sorry for the people who are standing there because I know you were cold. I was toasty.
but it was worth it. It really was. The stories themselves. Now, where do you get all the information from? All these stories. Can I pick up a book and see these things?
Sure. Probably the book that I recommend most to folks who want to learn a little more about the civilians is by a local fellow by the name of Gerald Bennett, and his book is called Days of Uncertainty and Dread. And
Days of Uncertainty and Dread, okay.
And he just did a really nice job of laying the battle out in town in all 3 days and what this family's doing and what that family saw and funny things, sad things. I've also do some newspaper research. There are several books out on civilians and also other Civil War research. You come across these beautiful little vignettes that are hidden in somewhat dusty volumes.
Yeah. That's great. Cause it's, again, it's like, it's great to hear that, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's not it's not like when you're hearing it, like when there's like World War One and the civilians and hearing that, you're not hearing like the dreads of it. I mean, it's like I hate to say that it's almost cute, but it's, you know, but because of, you know, the fact that the soldiers are being told, you know, don't harm civilians, you know.
And they're really going. They really went out of their way not to have what we call collateral damage, to not war on civilians. And I think we probably do that now, but I think we have a lot more collateral damage in these times. And
yeah.
It's harder with more modern weapons to kind of separate people.
Right. But and also, I guess people can see in some of the homes that there's a cannon holes or. Some homes, huh?
There are places where you can see the shells or the cannonballs in the wall. There are probably a couple where the cannonballs or shells got lodged in the wall. But most of the time, those things blew the wall out, and people, when they repaired the wall, would cement them back into the wall like it's a memorial because they realized this battle was really important even before it became history. And they're saying, this was important, and I want everybody to know that my house was important in that battle, and it was struck. And then there were other people like the Fosters, who we talked about when you were in Gettysburg, whose house was only 4 years old, and it was hit by more shells than any other building in town. It was hit three times. They didn't want to remember by putting any shells in their walls.
Mm.
See, so it was hit three times, but you're never going to find a shell in their wall. I think they wanted to say, we want to forget all about that little incident that left three big holes in our house.
Bet. Well, it was absolutely fabulous having you on to talk about this.
Well, thanks so much, Miss Exit. I appreciate it. And if you come back to Gettysburg, come see me again. We'll go see a different part of town.
Oh yeah, I'm looking forward. I think I'm gonna. Well, the place is going to open in April. That's the new visitor center. But I understand that there's still a portion of it. It's the cyclorama, I believe, that won't open until September. So
they're rehabbing the painting.
Yeah,
cool painting.
So I'll probably that's probably when I'll be back there is in September.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Love to have you.
Okay, and I'll have you take me on some more tour. Believe me.
Sounds wonderful. Thanks for having me on.
All right, you're welcome. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye bye. And we're going to take a quick sponsor break here.
This program is brought to you by M&S Italian Food Specialists, the official caterers for the crew of Lydia's Family Table, which can be seen on PBS. M&S is located at 34-23 Francis Lewis Boulevard in Bayside, Queens. There, you'll find over 100 different types of cheeses, store-made sausages, fresh meats, as well as great salads and sandwiches. Choose fully cooked items from the deli area, or just tell Joe what you're interested in preparing. M&S carries a full line of imported groceries for all your cooking needs. Call them at 718-353-8318. A family business for over 50 years.
Okay, well, let's see. Who do I got over here? I'm clicking on. Who's on?
From Fenice's.
Oh, now you call. Okay.
It's Valentine's night. We're trying to serve 200 people.
Boy, are you picky.
I got a little crazy here. How are you?
Okay. Let's just do a quick thing because I got to get into another segment.
Okay.
Just basically, I want you to just tell us about the history of this particular restaurant in Hershey.
Sure. Fenice's restaurant has been around. It's Hershey's oldest freestanding restaurant. It originally opened up as the De Angelis restaurant. It's been around since 1935. And we use all the original recipes for all of our sauces, our meat sauce, marinara, Alfredo, our lasagna, and our famous pizza. That was the first pizza that was ever introduced into Hershey, actually in 1947.
Right. Sam
DeAngelis? Sam DeAngelis,
oh, okay.
Celebrated his 86th birthday. He was one of the original owners,
mm-hmm.
along with the Pellegrini family. And I believe you went out to Alfred's Victorian also when
right.
you were here, right?
Right.
Well, ironically enough, Alfred, or as we call him, Fred, when he was 10 years old, him and his family and Sam's family, they're all related, and they grew up working in this restaurant that was called De Angelis at the time, now as Fenice's. And then Fred went on in the 70s to open up Alfred's Victorian over in Middletown.
Uh-huh.
So closely related, the two families, and both pretty historic restaurants.
I just want to let the audience know, by the way, I didn't do much of Hershey only because I've written about it before, but I wanted to get a few things in. One was, of course, the Hershey Theater, where I saw Spamalot. I understand that you get a lot of people from the Hershey Theater coming into your place.
Yeah, we do, actually, because we're two blocks away from the theater, and we also stay open late for the cast and crew. So last week, Tuesday through Sunday, we, besides having the patrons that were going to the theater, we also had the pleasure of having the entire cast and stage crew in every night after the show from, like, 11:30 at night till 1 or 2 in the morning. So theater weeks make for fun weeks.
Yeah,
That's
I would.
A beautiful theater, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, that theater is gorgeous. A lot of history behind that theater, as you know. That's been around for a long time, too. And that's what made, you know, I'm from New York. From Long Island, and when I moved out here 6 years ago, I just fell in love with the town. There's a lot of history, and, you know, just it's a good feel town.
Right. So, yeah, I love the food. I mean, I don't want to get into the whole food thing, because we can go
right.
forever just on the food, and
right.
I just want to highly recommend the lasagna.
Oh, isn't that good?
Yeah.
And you know, Meryl, we give such a large portion. That's like a pound and a half of pure heaven, that when people finish the lasagna, they get to take home the Fenice's of Hershey lasagna certificate. So we award a certificate when you finish that lasagna.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Yeah, that's fun.
I can understand that.
And it's good.
All right. I'm going to let you get back to dinner. I realize, I understand that it's you know, it's Valentine's Day, and you know, I pulled you away a little bit, but I just wanted people to know about the restaurant, a little history, and a little bite to eat.
And you know something, Meryl, if I could tell you, I miss New York. I love New York. I'm a native New Yorker. Go Giants.
Well, if you come to New York, come in, you know, you can come see me and bring your mom.
I will bring her with me also.
Okay.
Thanks, Meryl.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a good
nice
evening.
Night. Thank you. You too. Happy
Bye-bye.
Valentine's Day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Now, I had to cut that because we want to go into coffee talk. I guess I know who I have on the phone. Because
I don't have that. I don't have that great New York accent, though. But I'm happy to talk about coffee with you.
Well, what I want to talk about regarding, because you can introduce yourself to everybody.
Sure. This is Sandy Youssen, and I'm calling in from Green Mountain Coffee Roasters in Waterbury, Vermont.
Okay. Now, what the thing I want to get into is to understand about the coffee beans. I mean, like,
yes.
Tell us about, you know, where they come from,
yep.
Where does it make a difference, and then how they're roasted.
Okay, sure. Well, coffee is primarily grown in the areas around the equator. So it's really between the Tropic of Capricorn and the Tropic of Cancer where coffee is grown. And coffee is grown in countries like Africa, Indonesia, Central America, South America. And essentially, coffee is a seed of a cherry that grows on a tree. So the trees grow typically at pretty high altitudes. And the typical cherry tree takes about 3 to 5 years before it produces fruit. So it's a very long growing cycle. And then the cherries ripen ultimately and are hand harvested typically, and then processed so that you end up with a green bean that's brought to our facility as well as other roasters. So that's sort of the behind the scenes before it even shows up in Waterbury, Vermont. And then once it gets to our facility, we then clean the beans and roast the beans. And the roasting process is really the magic and the art and the science behind coffee. That's a process we call profile roasting, which brings out the sweetness and the true character of the beans. And from there, we flavor it, we grind it, we package it, and send it out to the rest of the country.
So let's just say, in terms of the roasting, I mean,
mm-hmm.
like you're experimenting to see how to roast the bean, and depending on what the coffee is that? I'm just throwing this.
Yep.
Out.
Yeah.
I don't know,
you know,
I'm throwing this. Out. I don't know shit.
Well, you're gonna have to come to Waterbury, Vermont, at some point and get a tour of our plant. But
oh, okay.
Basically, what happens is, you know, every bean is a little bit different. It's got different moisture content, different nutrients in it, and different flavors. And so we, you know, take a look, and we experiment a little bit, and we come up with a profile roast for that particular bean. Sometimes it's a lighter roast. Sometimes it can be a darker roast. We go with the roast that brings out what we think is the most unique qualities of that bean. And we roast over a 9 to 12 minute period, and the temperatures range between 425 and 440 degrees. So it's a chemical reaction that occurs to bring out that sweetness in the bean.
Now, is this like the decision of like Green Mountain to do it that way versus, let's say, some other coffee company? I mean, would another coffee company, let's say, if they had the exact same bean, they may do it something different?
They may do it a little differently. Every company has their own different set of quality expectations, and some areas of the country like a darker roast. But we have a wide variety of roasts to please a wide variety of palates. We have got a team of experts on board here that. You know, they are the ones that are experimenting and tasting and trying to figure out what's the best way to roast and blend each bean to create that perfect cup.
Okay, so in other words, let's just say, for instance, name a type of coffee,
Let's see. What about? I think we sent you some Tanzanian Gombe Reserve to sample.
Okay. So let's just say another company has that. Will another company be able to get all the same bean?
Well, some farms and cooperatives do sell to different roasters.
Okay.
So they may get the same beans, but treat it a different way in terms of the roasting process.
Okay. So in other words, if you see that particular type of coffee,
it
doesn't mean it'll taste the same.
It
with
may
another company.
Right. It may not taste the same. However, different regions of the world tend to produce different taste characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And, what we're finding is that consumers and coffee lovers are really getting a lot more sophisticated about these regional differences in coffee, very much like, people taste wine. People are tasting differences in their coffee cup based on the regions that the beans come from. So, for example, coffees from Africa tend to be very winey and bright in flavor, whereas coffees from Central America, for example, tend to be more smooth and balanced.
Okay. So, now, when you're dealing with, let's say, does it depend anything upon the roasting as of whether you'll have a strong coffee,
yeah,
a dark or whatever. Let's say I don't want a strong coffee.
Will you
roast a bean differently to produce a less darker or stronger coffee? Is that
we would. The dark roasts tend to taste what you're probably describing as stronger. And then we have lighter roasts that are, that maybe aren't quite as strong. And then we have blends of light and dark together that create, a very complex taste in the cup as well. So there's a pretty wide variety out there and within our line in particular that you can experiment with.
Now, is it the same like, and I'm just like thinking of wine. Let's say I got this particular coffee that you mentioned.
Yep.
And if I got this next year, will it taste the same?
It will have a lot of the same characteristics, but coffee does vary slightly from year to year depending on the growing conditions. Depending on the soil, the temperatures, there are a lot of things that will affect the beans. Although there are some consistencies, by region, as I've said. So for example, the Tanzanian Gombe Reserve is you know, we had it reviewed by Ken Davids, who's an independent coffee reviewer, and he noted that it had complex dry berry notes, like
mm-hmm.
blackberries or cedar, with undercurrents of honey and chocolate. And if you've, you know, done a lot of coffee tasting, you can really taste some really interesting flavors in the cup. Coffee has 1,200 taste and aroma characteristics,
wow.
whereas wine has about 800. So it's they're very complex flavors that you can get in these beans.
Now, how do you? Is there a procedure for tasting coffee?
Yes, actually, we have a coffee team, and they every day taste coffee they cup coffee for about 4 hours. Per day. And so they're tasting probably on average about 20,000 cups of coffee per year, which is incredible. But essentially what they do is they lay out 10 different samples of the same coffee and then 10 samples of another cup of coffee, another set of beans from a different region. And so they've got, you know, their coffee cups all around the tables, and they first test the coffee for the fragrance of the dry ground beans, and then they add water to it and assess the aroma of the coffee, and then they assess the coffee based on a variety of different characteristics, including the acidity of the coffee, its flavor, the body, the finish, the balance, and then they'll taste for any defects that might come through with the beans. And then they rate the coffees on a 100-point scale, which is pretty standard across the industry. So any coffees that are sort of above 80 are noted as specialty coffees, and typically the more unique or outstanding copies are rated, you know, 85 or above 90 even.
So is this like when you're having coffee, obviously you can't like sit at home and do a whole taste test of a whole.
Well, you probably wouldn't do it on the scale that that our coffee team does it every day.
Right.
But you can actually go out and find different varieties of coffee and taste them to see if you can pick up the differences between
right.
the different regions. So we just launched a new line of single origin coffees, and we've got 6 coffees in the line, and each coffee comes from a different growing region of the world. So you really can figure out some of the differences in the cup based on tasting them yourself right at home.
Do you find, I mean, people tend to, as opposed to, from what it seems to me, as opposed to, like, the type of coffee or the roast or whatever the coffee, they go by the brand. Is that a pattern? Does that seem more of a pattern?
That they go for the brand versus the region?
Versus the knowing what the total of the coffee is. In other words, like, there are people that'll just like, oh, I like Starbucks coffee,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
you know that type of thing, or they'll just you know like, or then there's the what I call the commercial coffee,
right?
You know, the thing that goes on you on the TV, and they you know tell you only have a half a cup until it's good, and then you have the whole thing. Wow. My wife only made a half a cup because that's all I'm allowed.
Well, I think, you know, we like to say, you know, that the best cup of coffee is the one that you like best.
Right.
You know, everybody has their own preferences for brand or for region, and you know, we've been lucky to have a lot of fans of the Green Mountain Coffee brand, but we know there are a lot of other brands out there too that you can taste and try.
Is Green Mountain Coffee like in terms of the availability? Is it is available, like, is it common, like, in the stores to buy, or?
Yep, we don't have our own retail stores, although we do have a store here at our headquarters in Waterbury, Vermont, that's a visitor center for your guests that might be coming up our way and braving the snow. we distribute our coffee through a variety of different channels, so you can find it in grocery stores. You can find it in many offices, a lot of universities, hospitals. We distribute to convenience stores, and you can find it, if you're in the Northeast, you can find it actually at McDonald's. We distribute our coffee through McDonald's under the Newman's Own Organic brand, and that's in McDonald's in New England and the Albany, New York region. Mainly.
Oh, cool. I have one of my friends, like, I remember when I've been up to Vermont a number of times, and each time I go up there, she tells me, please bring back Green Mountain Coffee for her. It's like, oh, okay, you know. And because she doesn't like Starbucks.
Right.
And it's interesting of people who say that they, I don't know what that's about, but they say they don't like Starbucks. They say it's too strong.
Right.
Well, I don't know whether it is, or it's, you know, maybe they're not picking out the right roast.
Well, sometimes, you know, the folks in the northwest of the country tend to prefer a darker roasted coffee. And so Starbucks, you know, typically will fall into that category. So some people do find that a little bit strong for their taste. You know, Green Mountain has a pretty wide variety of roasts that people can experiment with. It's funny that you mentioned, you know, we get a lot of folks that come up here to Vermont on vacation, and, you know, they come up and they have a wonderful time and they drink Green Mountain coffee, and then they go back to, you know, wherever they're from, and they want to continue to receive Green Mountain coffee, so they sign up for our online Cafe Express program, so they can get it shipped to them. But they become fans because they had such a great experience when they came up here to Vermont.
I guess I can understand. Well, I tasted some. I tasted some that had the flavors. Well, I'll get into the K-Cups in a minute, but I want to continue with talking about what about, you know, like, now I had heard that in terms of having espresso, that even though it's stronger, that it actually has less acidity. Is that what I think I heard, or something?
The darker roasts have less caffeine, which wouldn't necessarily, which is sort of a surprising thing that people don't necessarily expect.
Really?
Huh. Yep.
I guess that's what I should. Yeah, I have to tell you a quick thing that happened. Even as a kid, just like open up the bag and let me sniff it. It was like something I love to sniff. I used to go. A&P coffee was the thing. Was that something o'clock, something o'clock?
Right, 8 o'clock?
8 o'clock or something like that.
Yeah.
Coffee. And I remember my parents, and they used to buy that, and, you know, and you go right there and you grind the coffee, you know, whatever. And that's all I wanted to do is just go and smell it, you know. But in terms of drinking it, I don't drink a lot of it because the caffeine really flips me out.
Right.
And so I tell people, well, I'm okay, like, in the during the middle of the day is the best time for me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've eaten something, and if it's before I go to sleep, I can't do it really at dinner time because it's not just the caffeine, I think the acidity.
Right. Well, it is true that as the roast gets darker, the acidity does go down as well. So lighter roasts have higher points of coffee acidity.
So are you better off than, let's say, in the evening, like for dinner, to have an espresso?
It really depends on your own taste preferences. There are folks that aren't affected by the acidity, aren't necessarily affected by caffeine, but you know, we have some wonderful decaf coffees.
I'll have to do that.
But as you know, you don't necessarily have to give up taste just
right.
to give up caffeine. So there are a lot of varieties out there, and it's just kind of experimenting and figuring out what you like best.
Well, the mistake I made is I went into Starbucks and I was asking them about, you know, coffee tasting. They were telling me how they do it, and I first had a tall coffee first to begin with, and then after the 10 minutes, I get back to where I'm staying, and I can't understand why I'm flipping out. And I'm going, oh, you know, and I was like, I think my blood pressure went up and all this, and I went, oh, I think I bet one cup, that's it. That's one cup a day, that's all, you know.
I usually do one big cup in the morning, but if I'm doing a tour and I'm going over to the coffee department, then all bets are off because they make cappuccino like nobody else does.
I can imagine, yeah. And the other thing I wanted to ask is about when you're having like chocolate covered espresso beans. Now, why can you eat those? I mean, you can't just eat like any, you know, coffee bean, right?
Well, there's still quite a bit of caffeine in those espresso beans.
Just in terms of eating them. I mean, you
right.
can just chomp on and eat any coffee bean, right?
I suppose that you could.
Oh.
You know, we think it tastes better in liquid form.
Okay.
But you know, I guess you could chomp on a coffee bean.
Okay, so then, in other words, those chocolate covered beans are not
mm-hmm.
the beans themselves are not roasted or made or whatever a special way just so you can eat them.
I believe that the espresso beans are fairly darkly roasted. So, at least in my experience, but I don't know. I don't think that there's any special treatment to make them more edible. Except to cover them with chocolate, which, of course,
yeah, well,
covering anything with chocolate makes them more edible.
Can you just see having, like, a combination of chocolate-covered nibs with the coffee, with the espresso bean? Oh, goodness gracious. I'm flipping out right now. I'm even thinking about I had gotten into this whole thing. I don't know if you've ever had a fairy tale brownie.
Oh, no.
I mean, if anybody ever invented the perfect brownie, this company invented the perfect brownie. It's like eating fudge. Better than fudge.
That's too tempting. I haven't had dinner yet.
You have to, if you ever get a chance, and the problem, I don't think that they, like, you know, sell them in your grocery store kind of thing. You have to, like, go online.
Right.
And to their website. I think it's, like, just, like, brownies.com. I mean, to show you how good they are. But, you'll definitely have to try it. So now let's get into the thing regarding the K-cups, which are not
right.
bra sizes, you know.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up. So this is actually the 10th year anniversary of the Keurig brewer. And, you know, when you think about it, in, you know, back in the 1950s, you think of kind of these moms with their aprons and their percolator coffee machine.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then the auto drip coffee brewer came along. It was this big revolution.
Uh-huh.
Well, this is sort of the next revolution in coffee brewing. And what it does is it makes a single cup of coffee in less than a minute, and it eliminates all the guesswork that goes into making a cup of coffee. So you think about, you know, when you make a cup of coffee, you think, oh, well, how fine should I grind the beans, and how much coffee should I put in my filter, and what kind of filter should I use, and, you know, how much water should I put in, and what should the temperature of the water be? There's a lot of guesswork that goes into making that perfect cup of coffee. And, you know, when you create the perfect beans, you want to know that on the consumer's end, that they're going to turn it into the perfect cup of coffee. Well, the Keurig brewer takes all that guesswork out, and basically you have the brewer, and then you have a cartridge, which is a self-contained brewing system. You put it into the brewer, and you choose a size of the cup that you'd like to brew into, and it essentially controls all of the variables, the temperature, the pressure, the amount of bean, of brown coffee, and it brews this perfect cup of coffee in under a minute. So the brewer is made by a company called Keurig, and then the cartridges are called K-Cups, and there are a variety of different roasters that package their coffee into K-Cups, including right. Green Mountain Coffee. It's been a wonderful addition to a lot of offices, as well as in homes. So you think about it, you know, and one of the nice things about it is that there's a lot of variety in this K-Cup.
Right.
So you have, you know, different roasts of coffee, different varieties of coffee. You also have hot cocoa. You have tea. So, you know, if mom wants a cup of tea and then, you know, dad wants kind of his extra bold coffee and then, you know, the kids want hot cocoa, you can get that all in one system.
So now when you're making, I happen to have, I have a Breville.
Okay,
That's the machine I have, which I think,
So Breville is actually, we have Keurig has a partnership with Breville, so it's,
okay.
It uses the same K-Cups in the
right.
machine.
Yeah. So let's just say, in other words, in the machine itself, you're putting in, like, let's just say you have company, you know.
Yeah.
And you say, who wants coffee? And all five people say they want coffee. And what kind do you want? And, you know, it's like, and they all shout something different. And you go, and you know, instead of going, shit, what am I gonna do now? You know, let's call in for coffee. Let's just go. You know, you basically take out a whole tray of like, here, which kind do you want?
Right.
And they can pick it out. Now,
right.
Are you placing the exact amount of water for only one cup at a time?
Typically, the brewers have a water reservoir that you fill up.
Okay.
And then the machine will control the amount of water that goes into brewing that cup. And you can choose from a number of different sizes.
Okay.
But the machine does that work for you.
Okay. So it's, you know, so you don't have to worry about, oh, now you just finished one cup, now I got to fill it a certain amount for the next cup, fill it, you know, so every time somebody wants a cup, it's really just taking from the reservoir after you've, you know, filled it up.
Exactly.
Okay, that's
exactly.
Cool.
And some of the office systems are plumbed so that they're hooked up directly to the water system and you don't have to keep refilling the reservoir every time.
Wow.
So that's great for, you know, for an office where you just don't want to, you know, you want to minimize the time that people are spending
at the coffee machine, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, now they'll go to the water cooler and yeah. Well, you know, it's like, you know, when people are working, you know, I mean, I've come to the realization, I mean, and that we've trained ourselves to take breaks.
Yeah.
Because you can't like sit there and turn to your boss and say, for the next 5 minutes, I'm going to sit here and do absolutely nothing. And so you have to, the excuse, of course, the best excuse.
Right.
To go to the bathroom.
Right.
No one is going to deny you of, you know, going to the bathroom.
Right.
Now, I mean, not that, but you've also trained your body. that at particular times to do that. So you can take a break, too. But then you've also probably trained your body to take your coffee break.
Right, right.
And then, you know, sometimes becomes, you know, a social thing. Someone else is taking their coffee break. If they got that, they'd understand. But
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
So. Wow. What was that?
Okay.
What was that?
That sounded like some music there.
Do I have another caller? Do I have another caller or something? Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it sounded like somebody was on the other line.
Oh, on the other line. Maybe we of you.
No. I'm on your line.
No, I mean like, cause somebody like the phone that you're calling in on was somebody else able to pick it up?
No, I don't think so.
Oh.
I think it said something about radio. So I
oh, that
it
must
was
have
a...
been okay. So I guess it's something.
Hello.
Heavy. Who's this?
Hello.
Who's that?
Like
hello.
I don't know what's going.
Sounds like somebody's.
Who do I have here? Who's calling?
That sucks.
Hello?
Everybody, if you want to be...
Are you calling Blog Talk Radio?
Why can I hear myself? That doesn't matter. I'm sitting here live on radio complaining about how I hear myself. People in the chat room, tell me if you can hear it okay.
Hello? Who are you?
And I'm going to try to fix it. So I will be back in a second.
Is that
and
weird?
It's annoying me.
Hello?
I can hear myself. And it's not right. It's stupid. So hold on.
Who's calling in? Who's this?
This is Nick Marino from Pace Magazine.
Hello.
Oh, okay.
Be interviewed on your show at this time.
And I still
okay, hold, hang on a second. I'm trying to figure out. Let me end the other. I got that weird happening here.
Always
this is weird.
On Corey.
Whoever you are,
yeah.
Whether this is a ghost or not, I'm not sure. But can you kind of like hang up? Somehow you're in a you're on a radio.
You want me to call you back?
No, I don't want you to call back. I have this other person there. I'm hearing this young guy, and I don't know who he is.
Okay.
And I'm asking him to get off the phone, to hang up, so this will work correctly.
It doesn't sound like he can hear you.
I can hear him.
I can hear him.
All right, let me try calling you back.
Okay.
Bye.
World, do you want me to sign off as well, or?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I'll tell you what, yeah, because I don't know what's going on. Okay, anyway, it's great talk with you. I might be able to visit you, because I'm looking at the possibility of coming up to Vermont around
June.
The Stowe area, yeah.
Yeah, well, that would be great. You should not come up to Vermont without coming by and visiting us and tasting some of our coffee.
Okay. I will.
we'll give you a tour.
Okay, I will definitely do that. And
wonderful.
I appreciate your calling in.
Thanks so much.
Well,
thanks for having me on the show.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okie doke. Well, hopefully I got Nick Marino here, right?
Yes.
Nick, who's the editor of Pace Magazine.
Of me.
And who you wrote What I Miss About Michael Jackson. So
that's right.
So from what I understand, because it's the 25th anniversary
Pretty
of Michael Jackson Thriller.
Yeah. And that's right. Back at
so if you can manage to talk above some schmuck that called or want to know what's going on, tell us about this.
Let's maybe try this tomorrow because I'm not sure that this is going to work.
Well, this I'm only on Thursdays. I don't know what's I don't understand. You know the
what, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Welcome.
We'll try it maybe next week.
Yeah, let's do this next week, okay? Because this is totally ridiculous.
All right.
I'm really sorry about this.
Hello.
Who are you?
Sounds like there's someone else there.
Well, I'm gonna play this because this is Valentine's Day. Let's play a little music here.
Darkness. Red game, I think. Does it sound like an X-Wing? Is it sounding good? God.
And you will always shine, and I can feel your heart in mine.
1, 2, 3.
Your face I've memorized. I've just you. I look up to everything you are.
Okay,
in my eyes, you do know.
Did I hear you?
I've loved you for so long, and after all it's said and done.
So let me know
if you
have
after all.
Get someone on time. 704. Hello.
Thank you, Corey.
You walk past me.
Yes, I can help
that. I can feel
you on
the
Who is it?
Time changes everything. One truth always stays the same. You're still you.
Everyone in the chat room, you've heard the
beat. You're still you.
Not a good thing. Everyone, hold on.
I look up to.
Oh my god, get sex for 50.
Everything you are. In my eyes you do no wrong. And I believe in you, although you never ask me to. I will remember you and what life put you. I found one love. You're still you after all. You're still you.
I love that. I bring up a thing here to get help, and they're like aware of it already. That makes me feel better. That makes me feel like people
are actually
here.
Hello, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
So yeah, everyone, we're just doing the show like nothing happened wrong.
Can you hear me?
So if you want to call in.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I guess I'm going to have to end this a bit early. I'm not sure what the technical problem here is. We must have some, lines across, and I can't get this whoever it is to, like, hang up and let me do my thing, which would probably work best to do. Until next week, which I'm going to start to talk about. Apparently, there's a new country, and I'll tell you about that. Ooh. Country is called.
Rose, you have to say no. Yes, I already know. I already know that's my emotion.
Igrokramini. That's Igrokramini.
This really needs to work. I can do a show about.
So I'm going to end this right now. Again, my apologies.
Everyone, hold on to my audio.
I'm going to find out what's going on. And speak with you next week. Don't tell me. Did he get off? He got off the damn thing now. I have 15 minutes, and I can't, of course, you know, get the caller. Okay, so anyway, yes, Igrokramini. It's a new country. I'm not sure about it. I'm getting some bits of information about the country. Well, the reason, by the way, is they pronounce their T's. They don't pronounce their T's.
Hello.
Like we do. So, but anyway.
And I can hear myself.
I guess he didn't get off the air.
Yay.
He didn't get off the air, so.
This is very successful, hearing myself.
So, anyway, I'll see you guys next week, and I'll prepare the show and put it on my blog to let you know what's happening. Bye, everybody.
Any other questions? But don't that room. Don't.